I'm Edwin Newman, and this is Meet the Press, coming to you today from Boston, Massachusetts.
Meet the Press, now celebrating its 21st year on television and winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News. Meet the Press is brought to you by Allstate Insurance Companies, the good hands people, who find new ways to bring you better insurance protection. You're in good hands with Allstate.
The disruption and violence that have struck many of the nation's campuses this year finally engulfed Harvard, America's oldest university. Our guest today on Meet the Press is the president of Harvard, Nathan M. Pusey. We'll have the first questions now from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Dr. Pusey, you've come in for great criticism because you called the police to clear out University Hall. Now, with the benefit of hindsight and for the benefit of other university presidents who may be in the same position as you were, do you really think that was the best way of handling such a situation?
Well, I did at the time, and I must say I still do, but you have to recognize that it was the one of various possible alternatives. The others just seemed to clearly to be less productive or more productive of long-range harm than calling the police at that time. The question was whether or not we could survive such an action and still get the university back to its regular activity in a reasonable length of time, better that way or by letting the thing drag on. And had it dragged on and brought in very large numbers of people from all over the area and the region into the yard, I think probably the results might have been worse. I think it would have divided our community very, very seriously, and certainly I think would have been productive of long-range damage.
You're saying then that despite the fact that the police helped unite the SDS radicals and the moderate majority and a good part of the faculty, that if you had to do it all over again, you simply would have done exactly the same thing.
Well, I hope I'm never put in a position where I have to make that kind of decision again. But we did reckon at the time that some, perhaps at least 2,000 or more, of our students would show an immediate sympathy with the SDS because the police were called. But as I said, we had to weigh that against what we thought would be the prolonged disruption if we didn't do it.
Dr. Pusey, there are many people who say that what took place at Harvard just couldn't have happened unless there was something fundamentally wrong with the way the university was being run. Where do you place the blame? Where do you place the responsibility for what happened?
Well, I don't know. It's been growing in our community for a rather long period of time. That is, this use of violence and the effort to disrupt. It started with us in 1966, at the time of the McNamara incident. We had another episode the following year when the Dow recruiter came to our community and there was a sit-in. We had one in December this year in the Payne Hall incident where students insisted on sitting in on where the place where there was to be a faculty meeting. These efforts have been escalating, and there have been a number of small ones, too. I think that it's clear there is a small group of people that are determined to use force and violence. The thing that makes it possible, however, is that there exists also a very general discontent and unease in the student body and in the whole community. And it's the combination of these things that makes possible such an incident as the one that we've just been experiencing.
Dr. Pusey, there seems now to be some difference of understanding among the administration, the alumni, the students, the faculty, and even the public over what the basic issues are today, now, after all this thing was over with, at Harvard University. You've had a little time to put the whole thing in perspective. What do you now consider the issue which the university and the students and the faculty and the community face?
Well, to me, the issue is quite plain. It's really a matter of tactics and what are acceptable tactics and what tactics are not acceptable. That there are many issues that deserve to be discussed and are troublesome, there's no denying that. But in a university community, you simply cannot resort to force or coercion to try to have things your way without destroying the very nature of the university itself. And this is what we've been trying to say, that there has to be a line. Our community tried to draw that line as early as the McNamara incident when they said that you could not interfere with the free movement of a human being in our society. And yet some small group of students kept pressing and pressing and pressing and do not accept the notion that you cannot use violent and disruptive tactics. I think myself that these people know what they're doing, and they're not interested in keeping the university alive as a place for free discussion. But that really is the issue. It's whether the university can preserve its nature and go about its business, or whether it's going to become just a scene for politicking and squabbling.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be back with Meet the Press and more questions for our guest, the president of Harvard University. But first, this message.
Auto accident claims. Can payments be made faster? I'm Ed Reimers for Allstate. Perhaps you've seen recent articles in the newspapers or magazines about the problems in settling auto accident claims, personal injury claims, as well as damage to cars. Well, cars are relatively quick and easy to fix. But what about the person who is seriously injured, hospitalized, facing long convalescence, without an income, while the bills pile up? Allstate has looked closely at this situation and has developed what we believe is a working answer to the problem. We call it Pay in Advance, a new way to settle personal injury claims. Here's how it works. In a bodily injury accident where an Allstate policyholder is clearly at fault, Allstate steps in with immediate financial help for the injured. Money to pay doctor fees and hospital bills. Money to pay for damage to the person's car. And money for food and clothing for normal family expenses. Allstate pays this money within the limits of the insurance policy, and we don't ask the claimant to sign a thing. Later, when the claimant is ready, Allstate offers settlement of the entire claim. Obviously, pay in advance can't be made to work in all personal injury claims. Liability is not always clear. But where liability is clear, where we've used pay in advance, we've found almost total satisfaction from the people involved. Other insurance companies are also using this or similar methods of settlement. We welcome this, and we look forward to the day when pay in advance becomes standard practice for all insurance companies. Pay in advance. Another way we put meaning into the words. You're in good hands with Allstate.
Now, back to Meet the Press, an unrehearsed press conference. Here is our moderator, Edwin Newman.
Resuming our interview, our guest today on Meet the Press is the president of Harvard University, Nathan M. Pusey. You've just met Lawrence E. Spivak. The other reporters on our panel today are Haynes Johnson of the Washington Evening Star, Thomas Winship of the Boston Globe, and Sidney Lazard of NBC News. We'll continue the questions with Mr. Johnson.
Yes, Mr. Pusey, I would like to get into some of the motivations and causes for student unrest, not only at Harvard, but around the country generally. There seems to be a feeling of some people that this is merely a reflection of a sick society in America. And one of your colleagues, the president of Amherst, wrote President Nixon, as you know, saying that these are going to continue until some of the basic problems in America are solved, the war, riots, racial repression, and the rest. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think there's a good deal of truth in that. I have sympathy for the large numbers of students who are deeply concerned about problems in our national life and problems in our university life. As I tried to indicate a moment ago, my real quarrel is only with those who are interested in disruption and violence to stop the free work and discussion of these ideas in the university. Now, I don't see how any young person could be alive in the world today and not be worried. We all look back to the look upon the war in Vietnam as a basic source of unhappiness and concern. There are many other things. I think the basic feeling is that many young people feel that our society has been serving false gods, if you will, kind of getting and gaining and working all your life for saving up things, and has not paid enough attention to a broader range of humane values in existence. They also think that the older people are quite insensitive to this range of concern, and they have convinced themselves that the older people are not doing anything to correct it. I don't agree with their analysis or their estimate of it, and yet I do sympathize with it. And I think a lot of the general unrest on campuses springs from valid concerns. And insofar as people show these concerns, we as a nation ought to think of them as a source of future strength. It's just the impatience that insists on correcting the situation right now that is a little hard to live with.
Well, speaking of correcting the situation right now, there are many remedies being talked about, some saying get tough from the president on down, talking about putting more backbone in college administrators, and the attorney general is talking about a tyranny of the majority, a minority, and new laws. Do you think that's the way to go?
No, I don't. Many of us, I think, are terribly afraid about that kind of reaction from outside the campus communities, and it is something that we ought rightly to be frightened by. I think that the answer to this has to come from within the university community itself. I think it has to come from the students and faculty primarily, and it will come only as these groups themselves come to see that this kind of disrupting activity is something that can't be tolerated. And they'll have to withhold, I think, their sympathy with this small group of revolutionaries who don't care about the university if we're going to come through this period.
Mr. Winship.
Dr. Pusey, what do you see as the future of the student protest? How much of it will dissipate when the war closes? Do you think it's... a lot of people say it's 90% of the steam will go out of it when the war is over with. Do you think so?
Well, that would be a tragedy if that were true. This kind of disruption I'm talking about can't dissipate too soon, as far as I'm concerned. But the concern about the long-range problems, we hope that they will carry that with them into their adult lives and keep on trying to do something to correct them.
Now, going back to what the university can do, the governing board of Harvard is about 300 years old. Do you have any specific ideas on how it should be modernized, if it should be?
Well, you're talking now about the president and fellows or overseers.
Overseers.
We have two governing boards. Most institutions have one. I think there's a great deal of misunderstanding about, for example, what the role of the president and fellows is. This is a group of the president, treasurer, five other people, and it's in their name that the business of the university is conducted. The five fellows, their chief responsibility, I'd say, is to make sure that the institution is properly staffed and that it's possible for the institution to pay its bills. They do not meddle in the day-to-day activities. This kind of responsibility has long since been delegated to the different faculties of the university. They do help to relate the university to the outside world, to protect it, to interpret it, and to try to introduce into the university concerns from the outside world that should be, of which there should be an awareness inside. I think that kind of activity is an essential part for the health of an institution, and I would hope that something like our governing boards will continue.
Mr. Lazard.
Mr. Pusey, the SDS is the biggest and most organized of the disruptive student groups on campus. It says it's dedicated to the destruction of the establishment. It also has said that the university is the brain of the establishment and therefore must be killed off first. I'd like to know, can Harvard or any university come to terms with a group that preaches that sort of doctrine?
Well, now, not all SDS people at Harvard would subscribe to that. I think one of the things the public may not have observed is that each time the question about occupying University Hall was proposed to the SDS group, it was voted down. Still, they went right ahead. So it's a group within SDS that are the ones that have espoused violence and force. The large number of them, I don't really think, have gone that far. They are disenchanted with American society. They are also convinced that universities are somehow creatures of a corrupt society and minister to it. But I would think that there are lots of people in the SDS group at Harvard who have a genuine affection for the institution and some understanding of the institution that would make them proof against just accepting that as gospel without analysis.
Mr. Pusey, how would you propose dealing, though, with those students who are chronic disruptors of university life?
This is our major problem right now, and I wish I knew the answer and could give it to all the institutions in the country. I tried to say a moment ago, it seems to me that we can only cope with it when the students and faculty come to see themselves that this cannot be tolerated within a university community.
Mr. Pusey, Dr. Pusey, you said a moment ago that student body felt that the university administrators possibly were worshiping false gods. What can administrators at Harvard and at other universities do to better align themselves with the values of the young?
Well, I wished I knew a quick answer to that. One of the difficulties at Harvard is that we have not had as much, given as much of our effort to building administration, perhaps, as we should have. The administrative officers at Harvard are chiefly the deans of the faculties, and these people are all professors. They are faculty members. We don't have a separate group of administrative officers that are some different kind of species. I think that we have counted on these deans, the deans of students, masters in houses, tutors, members of senior common rooms, somehow to keep a warm relationship between the authority in the institution and the students. And we probably have not been as imaginative as we should have been in seeing where this is not functioning as fully, as strongly as it ideally ought to.
Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Pusey, you've come in for criticism, too, because you didn't ask for faculty support before you called in the police. Why didn't you?
Well, the particular decision was taken on the in the hours following the occupation itself. We had been anticipating that some such incident might occur for almost a year, and from the time that I've been president, the group to which I've turned directly for advice, consultation in these matters, is what I call this Council of Deans. They are the heads of the various faculties of the university. As I've just said, they are also members of the faculty. And I had assumed that in talking with them and getting their views, I was getting access to faculty opinion and also, to a degree, student opinion.
Did they all favor the takeover, Doctor?
During the course of the hours of discussion, there were a number of different opinions expressed as to what we should do. This was their responsibility to try to propose the different alternatives and discuss them and make the cases for them. In the end, I think it's quite clear that there was no dissenting opinion about the decision when it was finally taken.
Dr. Pusey, there are some who feel that Harvard University should forget all the charges against the students who occupied University Hall. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't see how the faculty can possibly do that. I think that this was a direct threat to the operation of the university, particularly to the Faculty of Arts and Sciences, to its properly constituted officers, and I think if the faculty were not to consider that a serious matter, it would be a serious matter.
Now, there are a great many Harvard alumni who feel that the corporation and you have yielded to the coercion of the strikers by granting most of the important demands they made by using force. Can you tell us what significant demands the strikers made that have been turned down?
Well, I don't know which ones you could say have been granted. The main one, I suppose, was the, or a group of them, on the ROTC issue. That issue was discussed pretty widely by students and faculty last November, and then there were interruptions, but finally a faculty vote taken as to what was a desirable course of action, and we have been following that course of action ever since. The black student demands? The SDS demand was that ROTC should just be thrown out right now, this instant. And that, of course, we have not done. We are talking and trying to find out how this can be worked out, if following the direction that the faculty gave, that if it stays, it has to be at the level of an extracurricular activity. Now, the black student thing is a very special matter. They had, again, there had been a faculty committee and people working on that problem for almost a year, and had come up with recommendations, a program expressed in the so-called Rosofsky report. The faculty had adopted this in February, and then in the weeks, I think just maybe the days, almost the hours before this disruption had occurred on April 9th, there was dissatisfaction expressed with that by the blacks. And that matter came back for action by the faculty in the period of all this recent excitement. Now, they did vote in regard to this, things that were not in the original report. And I think, on the other hand, that the faculty would all have felt that there were reasons for considering this a very special case. The action taken here does point to another thing that's part of the general background that I think everybody ought to have in mind. Student dissatisfaction, black among the blacks and whites, turns in large measure on the rate or pace at which change is affected or not affected. And I think they were very impatient with the slowness with which this new program for the black students was moving, and insisted on quicker action. Now, I do think there's no question that it has been speeded up, and this probably contrary to the earlier intention of the faculty. It presents problems. Whether or not these can be worked out in the next two or three years remains to be seen, but there's no question that pressure did lead to a tremendous acceleration at this point.
About 3 minutes left, gentlemen. Mr. Johnson.
Yes, I'd like to go back to the question of which seems central, and that is the use of force. And you're faced as a decision to bring in police, for instance. This has been the case at Harvard, at Columbia, back in Chicago during the conventions, where police come in and then use perhaps unnecessary force, club and kick, take off their badges and so forth. Obviously, we're not handling it very well. Do you have any thoughts on what can be done to handle the use of force more discriminatingly?
No, we were terribly worried about that, and I think anyone would be in a case like this. You want to try to use the least amount of force and to try to prevent injury. It seemed important, therefore, to have enough force so they can act quickly. There were some unhappy incidents in this. One can't deny that. On the other hand, the clearing of the building, it does seem to me, if people look at it fairly, they would have to agree that this was done remarkably quickly and with a relatively small amount of injury.
Mr. Winship.
On the other side of the coin, there seems to be a certain broad dissatisfaction with the performance of faculties on campuses, devoting too little time to classroom teaching, giving the same dull lectures year in and year out, devoting too little time to outside of the classroom work. Do you have, and copping out on the students generally, let alone the administration in times of stress, do you have any suggestions for getting more faculty involvement in a continuing way?
Well, I wish we had at least another half hour if we're going to open up this situation. When we talked a moment ago about part of the unrest being due to the students' worry about society, I said that a lot of it was due also to their worry about the university, how it's governed and so forth. But there are also deep worries about the character of their education, about the curriculum, how it fits their present needs and future needs. And there's a great deal of worry about methods of teaching, and that sort of thing. Now, a lot of this clearly is legitimate. And this is the kind of thing that people have to face up to and work out slowly over a period of time, and I hope in an atmosphere of reason and decency.
1 minute left, gentlemen. Mr. Lazard.
Mr. Pusey, what do you think about students who insist that they be allowed to participate in drawing up the curriculum and choosing teachers and more or less deciding what's relevant to their own education?
I think they certainly ought to be heard on all of these issues, and one of our problems is to devise machinery whereby they may be heard. I do not agree with those people that think that the decision-making power about curriculum or appointments of faculty should be entrusted to students.
30 seconds left.
Can't be.
Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Pusey, your supporters are worried that recent events may force you to resign, and your critics, of course, are worried that you won't resign. What are your intentions?
Well, I have no intention of resigning. I must say that anyone that has one of these jobs today would have to recognize that it's not just a activity filled with pleasure and happiness, but there still are things that are worth trying to do.
Thank you, Dr. Pusey, for being with us today on Meet the Press. We'll be back with you in just a minute after this message.
When a car or a truck has served its purpose, it goes to a place like this, where it is picked up and squeezed by a Vickers hydraulics unit, a unit capable of creating over 2 million pounds of pure crush, a unit that converts steel trucks into steel bales. Vickers, a leader in hydraulics, is part of Sperry Rand. A UNIVAC computer, also part of Sperry Rand, compares the result of this blood test with millions of others stored in its memory bank. UNIVAC can predict the possibility of a disease months, sometimes years, before the symptoms appear. At Sperry Rand, we're synergistic. We do a lot of different things. One day we crush a car. The next day we prevent a disease. Wait till you see what we do tomorrow.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin and stamp self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next week on Meet the Press, our guest will be another headline figure in the news. Now this is Edwin Newman saying goodbye for Dr. Nathan Pusey of Harvard and Meet the Press.
Today's edition of Meet the Press was brought to you by Allstate Insurance Companies, the good hands people who find new ways to bring you better insurance protection. You're in good hands with Allstate. Later this afternoon, beginning at 5, 4 Central Time, see a special edition of the Frank McGee Report. And remember, for the best coverage of local, national, and news from around the world, you'll see it best on NBC Television. Hear it best on NBC Radio. Meet the Press has been a public affairs presentation of NBC News and has come to you live from Boston, Massachusetts.